This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And greetings, happy Friday. Welcome to the Steve Day Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am Steve Dace with Todd Erzin, and for one more day, our very capable, just flat out awesome intern, Victoria, who has done, there it is, very nice. Very nice, 101% biblical worldview certified. I'm not going to question it, Todd, you?
In your face, McIntyre.
That's exactly right. I mean, she's earned it and has just done a phenomenal job. And today is her last day. And the fact that she has been mocked and trolled by some of our own followers who do the same to us, I think, is a term of endearment and
yes,
indicative that, you know, she's crossed the threshold here and has done a great job for us.
Nailed it.
Absolutely. You can let us know what you think about what we think lots of different ways, especially today. Because we're going to do something a little bit different today. I'm going to tell you about that here in a second after I first tell you about our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company. They are the Patriot-owned coffee company that makes great coffee while sharing the same values that you do with a flavor for every freedom-loving American. And if you want to try them out today or try it again, go to firstcup.com and use my last name, Dace, as your promo code. You'll get 10% off. You'll see that when you order it, the roast date is put there on every bag and it's shipped to you within days of being roasted to make it as fresh as absolutely possible. Firstcup.com, promo code DACE for 10% off. And if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 10% off for the life of your subscription at firstcup.com using the promo code DACE. So we normally do the DACE group today, and I can't think of a time ever that when we were here to do the show live in real time on a Friday that we did not do the day group. Can you think of any time that's not occurred?
I don't think that's ever happened.
I don't think it has either. Today is going to be that day. And there's going to be a couple of reasons why. The right reason is we reached out to several of the people that we love to book, and it was just hard getting everybody's schedules to match up. With Aaron being gone, we actually need two people today. And so When I met a little resistance getting the day group booked, I then decided on the right reason we're not going to do this today. The right reason is, I'm not entirely sure with some of the stuff that has gone on this week that I want to relive a lot of it, frankly, and I'm not sure how to rehash it without further circling the drain, you know. And this is where Aaron's presence and Bleep Lord Nefarious says, even with its heavy, you know, extra strength ibuprofen levels of blackpilling, there is, it does sort of also take the edge off a little bit. You see
sure.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just kind of thought, man, I don't have the heart to go back and rehash a lot of this stuff all over again. And we have been so backlogged with feedback that I thought you guys needed to make good. So we are going to devote the bulk of our show today into getting to as much of your feedback in the inbox as we possibly can today. Are you okay with that?
I think it's going to be fun. Feedback's always great.
It is. And so we're going to get through as much of that as we possibly can. But first, there's something I want to address, and I'm going to do that after I tell you about our friends over at Preborn. They know that what we've done to our children is the greatest sin in our history as a country. They know it's still happening every day because they're still out on the streets every day trying to stop it from happening. And while the overturning of Roe was a great step to ultimate victory, just one meaningful step it was nevertheless. So as the battle continues, if you're looking, where do I go? Where could I give my time, talent, and treasure? This is one place for sure that you can. And a lot of you have. I mean, with your help, we've worked with Preborn to save tens of thousands of babies' lives the last few years. Throughout the history of their ministry, Preborn has saved hundreds of thousands of babies' lives. How? What's their approach? Well, they do this in genuine thing where they just decide, why don't we persuade the way God does? So, God believes and uses the method of grace and truth, uses them both. It's not grace or truth, truth or grace, or mostly grace, and maybe every now and then some truth. It's both. I mean, what does the Gospel of John say about Jesus? For the law came through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. That's their approach at Preborn. And so there's a confrontation that happens with moms. Now, it may not necessarily be an aggressive one, but it's a confrontation nevertheless. If they are contemplating murdering their children and they are confronted, their consciences, with the knowledge that that is not a blob and an unviable tissue mass, it's a child, and now their conscience is pricked. But even if they make the right decision, they know that it's not an easy way to live. And so they're there with the grace as well, the support these moms need before and after birth. All of this is tax deductible if you donate and to help to make it free to these moms and their babies. All right. And I know a lot of you have. So let's keep it going. Preborn.com/Steve is where you can go. That's preborn.com/Steve. Last night I saw on social media, I think so far this year, the most, given his background, he may take offense at this, which is why I'll say it. It might be the most prophetic observation I have seen from a member of the ministry in America so far this year. And I thought it really encapsulated a lot of what I take too many words to write and say. And that's why I wanted us, before we got to feedback and elongated, extended Feedback Friday today, Todd, I wanted to address this. Okay?
Okay.
And some of you might recall, was it a year or two ago, we had a pastor by the name of Joel Webben on the show, and it was, he had written a book, and one of the things that he urged is that if you're a believer, get out of a blue state and move to a red.
Yeah.
And there was like a lot of debates about that on the show during the course of that year, some of which I provoked, frankly, right? Okay. I want to share what he posted that I saw on X or Twitter last night, because I think this is the most prophetic observation about where we are in this culture and where the church is and the role it's played in helping the culture get to this point that I have seen so far this year, especially in light of its pithiness. He wrote, "Part of the problem in evangelicalism is that pastors often spend more time addressing exceptions than they do norms. They preach the footnotes while neglecting headlines. This is because fighting dead dragons will always be easier than fighting living ones." And he goes on to talk about one particular example, but there's really no need to address that example because I think this is systemic. It's every example. I mean, the minute the abortion debate begins, Todd, where do we jump every time right away?
Exceptions?
Correct. Every time.
You know how much I love that.
Correct. Every time. Why? Why does this happen? Well, let's go back to the very first argument that takes place in the scriptures. Let's go back to the first debate.
Did God really say?
Did God really say? But what's the MacGuffin of the plot here? What's the impetus that instigates the conversation? God says to Adam and Eve, "I have given you all of creation, name the animals, be fruitful, multiply, subdue it. I bestow upon you the covenantal headship over what I just created in my name. Right? That's what he says.
Yes.
I've given you, and the word for that, which I just defined, the word for that is?
Dominion.
Dominion, which, what is our word of the year on the show?
Dominion.
Dominion, yes. So I've given you dominion, except I reserve. Now, God still has ultimate dominion, correct?
Yes.
He could have created this and then reserved all of it exclusively for himself, correct?
Yes.
And he would have been well within his rights because who has ownership of a thing? The thing that was created or that which created the thing?
The latter.
The latter. So he has dominion over all of this. He could determine, and I'm going to keep all this for myself, do exactly what I tell you to do, take my orders. He could have done that and would have been well within his rights because he's God and we're not, right?
Right.
But that's not what he did, is it?
Right.
He created, all right, just like it says, for God so loved the world that he gave. We're talking about the Messiah, right? For God, then what we could do the same thing about the creation of the world. God created the world and then he gave. He gave a portion of his authority to that which he created under headship to Adam, right?
Yes.
But then he says, I'm going to reserve this one thing, though. This one thing is for me. It's not for you. It's for me. Another way of defining it would be, if someone gave you 99.9% of something and then kept 0.1% of it for themselves, you would call that the what?
The exception.
The exception. That's what you'd call it. So when the serpent arrives, when the enemy arrives, does the enemy begin arguing the holistic goodness of God and that which he has given? Does the enemy make an argument and say, you know, I mean, are you sure God is good? He gave you 99.999% of that which he created. He gave you dominion over it, control over it. I mean, that would be a silly argument to make, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so someone gave me 99.999% of something that I'm not owed, that I'm not owed. I don't deserve. Someone just gave that to me. The idea that we would argue that's not good enough. That the person who gave that to me, even though I'm not owed that, even though I don't deserve that, even though I've not proven to be worthy of such, the being that gave that to me, no one would argue at that point, well, that wasn't kind. That wasn't generous. No one would do that, right?
Right.
So that's exactly why the enemy doesn't make that argument, does he?
Right.
When does he begin the argument? Where does it start?
Exception.
With the exception. That's where it starts. Following me here so far?
Of course.
The rest of you picking up when I'm laying down here? There's a reason why every time there is an argument about what's righteous or not, what's holy or not, just basic right and wrong. There's a reason why one side wants to always start with the exception. They're modeling their father, the devil, because that's what he did. The very first argument we ever have in the history of this thing called creation, humanity, the very first argument we ever have is over the exception. Not over the overall goodness of God, for that would be a losing argument. That's why the enemy started with the exception. Adam and Eve decide, well, actually, Eve decides. Adam didn't even take part, okay? Again, gave up his dominionship, right? Gave it up. Doesn't even take part in the conversation. He's there the entire time. So Eve decides to go ahead and argue the exception with the enemy, right? You ever heard the old saying, the devil's in the details?
Yes.
Yeah. So the minute that Eve agrees to the premise that the debate over the goodness of God and the righteousness of his decree should be over what we perceive to be an exception and not the overall goodness of God, the minute that Eve agrees to that premise, who's going to win that argument? Whoever's premise is being argued will always win the argument every time. It's just a matter of how long it takes for that outcome to be realized. But whoever's premise is established and both sides argue has won the argument. We're just waiting for the final toll. And since that moment as a species, we love the exceptions. And The reason we love the exceptions is, and this is what Pastor Joel is getting to here, it takes the responsibility off of us. Which is why, listen, I'm one of the personhood OGs, guys. I mean, I was helping organize personhood stuff 15 years ago before most people knew what it was, okay? That being said, I love your argument. Hey, just, okay, let's just pass a bill out of Congress and put it on every Democrat governor and president's desk, or even just put it up for a vote. Tell you what, all right, we're just going to ban every single abortion except in the case of rape, incest, and life of the mother, ban them all except for those. Good, we're good. Hey, you win. Just grant their argument. Grant their premise on exceptions. They won't take that, will they?
Never.
Never. Why? Because it's not about the exceptions. They just want to kill the kids. Just like for their father, the devil, it wasn't about the exception of this one example of God excluding something for himself. It was really his disdain overall for God's goodness, period. And therefore, the devil's disdain for us, whom God created in his image and called it good. The exceptions are the lie. And the amount of time we spend talking about exceptions today, I mean, are there some moronic red pillars you see on Twitter?
Of course.
That basically want, you know, to take maleness back to, they want to go the other way now. They want to take it back to Bronze Age, me, Tarzan, you, Jane, yes. Paganism of misogyny. Do we see evidences of this?
Of course.
Yeah. What is the more glaring threat, though, however, collectively in our society? Third wave feminism or a few Twitter nitwits, okay, masturbating to notions on social media and sticky staining their keyboards over pretending it's the 12th century BC. What's wreaking currently more havoc in our society, do you think, by and large?
The former.
Is it even close? Is the ratio even close, do you think?
No.
And we could just do this with everything, could we not?
Yes.
Sure.
And we do.
All right, so the we're going to get rid of ESG, DEI. Go find the one racist that's left. Okay, that said something stupid to a black person, and that's exactly why we've got to wreck all of society. Again, the exceptions. It's always about the exceptions. Why? They're modeling their behavior that they learned from their father, the devil. The devil's about the exceptions. I remember when I was, some of you will say seeking, others of you will say being wooed by the Holy Spirit to salvation, depending on what tradition you come from. And we interviewed a series of pastors, and I thought I was the first one to ever come up with this question. And it's funny now, in my line of work and how public I am with my faith, I'm the one that gets these kinds of questions now.
Let's suppose there's like an Aborigine that no missionary ever reached in the deep brushes of the darkened outback of Australia or New Guinea. And they die in a fire saving a busload of kids. Do they go to hell because they didn't believe in Jesus? Right? I literally thought I was the first person to come up with this.
But see, I'm asking this in my flesh. I'm looking for the what? What am I looking for?
The exception,
which means since I'm asking this in my flesh and I'm looking for the exception, I am also at that point in my life, I'm also mirroring my true father at that point in time, am I not?
Sure.
The devil. Looking for the exception. And what got me into church is a pastor once looked at me and said, I'm going to trust that a God who would spare not even his own son on my behalf can be trusted to deal justly with humanity. I thought, that's a good answer. And I didn't have a comeback, and it broke me. I went to his church the next week. But see, I'm looking for exceptions. Why? Because I don't want to answer that call. I don't want to convert. I'm a sinner. I want justification to remain in my sin. That's what I want. And that's what we all want. You could really say ultimately that of all the people on earth, it's the Christian who truly doesn't get what he wants. Everybody else gets what they want. They want sin. They crave it. They want they want first class aisle seat in the eternal smoking section. And they get what they want. That's what they want. When we argue the exceptions over the rule, almost always, it isn't to be contrarian. I'm not saying we should never argue exceptions. There's a period of time to make sure that we're not making the perfect the enemy of the good at the same time, right? It's okay, right. It's okay to entertain contrarians, okay? But understand, though, when we argue exceptions from that perspective, it is to make sure we truly are doing the most good we can do. When that's not usually the majority of the exception arguments that we have as a culture, is it?
No,
the majority of the exceptions arguments we have channel our your true father, the devil. It's how can I get away with still getting away with the evil that I want to continue doing? That's really what it's about. I want to, which is why going back to your longstanding offer to just give them what they want. Okay, let's just put on every Democrat legislator, every Democrat member of Congress, every Democrat executive's desk, a piece of legislation saying we're going to ban all abortions except rape, incest, and life of the mother, and watch what they do with it.
And okay? If I was in Congress, this would be the first round of legislation.
Right.
Right, I put on the table of everybody. Let's do this.
Right. They don't really have bleeding hearts for women that have been sexually assaulted, because these are the exact same people that are fine with just erasing women. All together. They don't care about the women, guys. They just want to kill the babies. And that would get exposed if you ever did, which you've long suggested, right?
Yes.
Because that exception is not about, hey, are we making sure, you know, we are who we claim we are? Are we making, have we undermined our own testimony here? Are we, you know, are we starting to think that our own bowel movements don't have a scent, right?
Yes.
No, this is the exception of, well, I just want to justify my own demonic, satanic, sinful nature and narrative. And so I will immediately go to the exceptions that give me the opportunity to do that. And that's most of the exceptions that we debate today, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it is so much easier, as Joel articulates here, it is so much easier for many pastors to find a dead dragon, one that won't hit back. Think of how many people just lined up to genuflect for the George Floyd funerals. How many of your pastors probably gave you a lecture that Sunday, but then didn't say anything when Roe v. Wade got overturned? Didn't say anything when Drag Queen Story Hour took place at the library down the road. Not an example of a dead dragon versus a live one?
A good one.
Yeah, that's a great example, yeah. And you know why it's a great example? Because it's plentiful. Because it's everywhere. I don't remember the exact quote, but one of the things that Luther is famous for saying, it essentially comes down to, if I am holy and pious on the things that in my period of time are easy for me to be holy and pious over, but I run from the battle where it is the hottest rather than run to it, then I am a coward and I've betrayed the faith.
Some solid food right there, and I'm Catholic.
That's right. Well, in many respects, Luther is itemizing or quantifying Dante's Inferno. Who's at the innermost ring of hell? The betrayers, the cowards. In Revelation, when Jesus itemizes who goes into the lake of fire forever beyond redemption, the first people listed are what? Cowards. The cowards. The first ones.
Big tent.
Yeah. And we ain't in it, have you noticed? I just wanted to let that simmer for a few minutes. I was quiet there on purpose for a good solid minute. I think there's some real solid food here by Joel. And I want us to contemplate here on this episode today what this means, because in many respects, it is the skeleton key that unlocks much of how the church has quit in America, and therefore quit on America, and quit on the West in general. And what we, you know, Todd's going to call this binding and loosing, but what we tend to sow in the unseen realm, or what seeds we tend to plant spiritually, will manifest in the seen realm. They'll manifest naturally. And so this is because we have fixated on these exceptions theologically, we are doing so ideologically virtually everywhere in our culture. And the goal of doing so is to paralyze us to not do any good. There's a video going around today by someone who I in my previous parts of my career have had a lot of respect for. I once booked this person to moderate a U.S. Senate primary debate here in our home state. And he's going off about how the traditional Reagan three-legged stool is gone, and we've compromised all of our, all of our rules of engagement. And are there exceptions of people wearing our uniform that have demonstrated like no credibility or integrity at all? And are eager to encourage our own people to debase themselves for some political or worldly gain.
Of course.
Yeah, and we've expressed concern about that on a regular basis, right? But again, when we are assessing the overall landscape of evil we're confronted with in the culture, is that the exception or the norm?
Exception.
It's the exception. The norm is that with the spirit of the age is unleashed. So we can ponder the lint in our navels. We can sandballot into Baya ourselves and say, well, we're not sure you have the right permission to rebuild those walls. We're not sure that you're actually doing this the right way. I mean, why are you holding that sword? Why do you need a sword to rebuild a wall? Come down and let us talk. Or we could Nehemiah this thing and say, I will not come down, for I am doing a very important work. And you don't want me to come down anyway, because I'll probably kick your ass. That's pretty much a summation of the book of Nehemiah. What I just said. I'm here to do an important work. Leave me alone. And you don't want me to come down from this wall anyway, because if I did, I'd just end up kicking your ass. Which, that's how the book ends. That's what he does. And then says, God, remember me for what I did for you. I'm reminded of one of my favorite quotes from D.L. Moody. I know you love it when I recycle this one. I know you love this one.
I do.
I like my way of doing things better than your way of not doing anything. And that one sticks the landing in this day and age every single time, does it not? Every single time. It is a rebuke. I mean, this was said like 100 years ago, guys, but for this period of time, the kids would emoji 100 for, it is the rebuke for this age. I like my way of doing things better than your way of not doing anything. That's kind of how Nehemiah ends. I like my way of doing things better than your way of not doing anything. Because your way of not doing anything is I drove Sanballat and Tobiah out. When I left, you moved him in. So now I got to drive you out for letting him in. That's another summation of how the book of Nehemiah ends. Well, we're concerned about the exceptions. What will people think of us? What will your Creator think of you? What will He think of us? If we didn't do all the good we could do, because of the exceptions.
He will say, I hardly knew you.
That's exactly what I think he's going to say. Just a thought that I wanted to open the show with on a Friday.
Just spitballing.
Yeah. Do with it what you will. And thank you to Pastor Joel for inspiring it. We'll come back. It'll be Feedback Friday when we do.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
You know, making sure you have the fruits and vegetables in your diet that you need to maintain a healthy diet is so difficult nowadays with how busy we are, how expensive produce can be. There's a reason why the foods that are terrible for you are cheaper. All right. The average person doesn't even eat half of the recommended servings in a day. That's a huge gap in nutrition and also your preventative health. That's why Balance of Nature is here to provide the on-the-go solution, and they haven't raised their prices in 10 years. Their proprietary blend of 31 fruits and vegetables come in easy-to-swallow capsules and will give your body so much of the nourishment it needs. I mean, imagine trying to eat 31 different kinds of produce in a single day. Well, that's what you're getting with the Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies. When you go to balanceofnature.com, you'll get 35% off plus $10 off in any additional sets with your first order as a preferred customer by using my discount code DACE. So 35% off plus $10 off any additional sets with the discount code DACE. That's limited to 5 sets, but you're going to save a ton of money when you go to balanceofnature.com and use the code DACE for the big discount. Balanceofnature.com. I've been using this in my own regimen these days. Absolutely love it. Balanceofnature.com. Use the code DACE for the discount. That's balanceofnature.com. All right, let's get to some extended Feedback Friday. You ready?
Okay.
Let's start with Donna. I think it's Yost in Morton, Illinois, or maybe it's Jost. Could be either way. Love you guys' show. I met Victoria at the Family Leadership Summit last year. I recognized her from the segment she did for your show when she was originally your intern. Erin had her do a segment on the LGBTQFU presence in retail stores during Pride Month of last year. She was gracious, kind, and helpful. I enjoyed visiting with her. I've often wondered what she's been up to since then. Imagine my delight when she showed back up and is doing such a great job filling in for Erin. Would you please tell her I said hello and that I pray for her? So she obviously knows because we read this first. And here's why I wanted to read this note first. All right. I mean, typically you do something like this at the end, but, you know, we could just get going here and then you're at the end of the show and you forget. So I wanted to make sure we did this right here at the beginning. All right.
We like to leave you with a nice black pill at the end of a Friday.
That's true.
Normally.
Yeah. Let's not leave you with something uplifting.
No.
Here. No. Victoria, you have just been phenomenal.
Yep.
And you have done an incredible job. And I mean, I'm at a loss for words. I mean, you've stepped into a very difficult situation, and Erin gets some of the credit for training you, obviously, but the training wheels were taken off long ago, sister, and we have it's been seamless. Technically, other than the, you know, here's the best compliment I can give you. Technically, Erin's loss hasn't been felt at all. It's really been his on-air contributions that have been felt, and you are the reason why. And so I wanted to make sure before we got out of here today, in front of, you know, the 7 or 8 people that are probably listening right now, okay, or tuned in, that we gave you some helmet stickers and said thank you very much for what you've done for our network and our show here for the last 2 weeks. It's been beyond impressive. And if there's anybody in our business with an opening for a producer and they are not making you an offer that has you reconsidering Bible college, they're dumb. They're really stupid, and should force you to say no. That's what I would do.
Steve, that is so kind. Thank you so much. It's been so fun to be back here and do everything and just like laugh with you guys off air. And that note was so sweet. I pray for that girl all the time. That lady that came up to me, she was so sweet. So it's been so fun. I have to give Aaron credit. He worked really hard with me and he was very kind and he is a very good teacher. So we have to give him credit too, but it's been so fun. Thank you.
And I don't think we've even been that bad of an influence. If anything, maybe you having you here has forced us to clean up our acts a little bit.
I know. I know the audience is probably mad about the lack of Lindsey Graham jokes.
Yes. There's a few things I would have said at different times this week, and I looked over and I said, that could be my daughter right there, so I'm not going to say it.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. So thank you very much for everything. You want to add anything before we get back to regular business?
You kind of buried the lead. I mean, you've never had the luxury before of when Aaron gets annoying to just say, hey, kid, why don't you take a vacation?
Well, see.
No. The door's open wide.
I was.
I'll say it.
Yeah, it's a poker. This is a game of poker. I was holding that one back a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But now we've just kind of showed our hand.
Love you, Aaron.
I can replace you, kid.
Can't wait to have you back, Aaron.
Yes, we are excited for Monday as much as we will miss Victoria and the phenomenal job that she has done. All right, back to regular order.
Sure.
All right, enough with the sweet stuff. David, I think it's Mache. You go off about Biden inappropriately crossing himself while discussing abortion, but I have no problem with Dear Leader, the ultimate rhino, MAGA, Swamp King, DJT, which he puts in all caps, by the way. Selling autographed Bibles to pay his legal fees and fund his bankrupt campaign. Straight up hypocrisy. And he gave himself, for his own take, a 100. Okay. Now, I think we actually need to start there. Okay. Priorities here. Because as important as I think this forsaken election is, and I might be the last one left who does, all right, including the people that are actually campaigning in it. Okay. The dude code here has to come first. Fair.
Okay.
All right. You can't 100 yourself, bro. I all in favor?
Yeah. I find all caps problematic.
Well,
as
we're going to get to that too. Okay. That's a second violation. Okay. but David, let's just set aside, you know, the orange idol for a second. All right. We're just dude to dude here. Dudes to dude. Okay. You can't 100 yourself. You can't 100 your own take, all right? Just like you can't gloss yourself, right? You can't come up with your own nickname and then try to like pimp it out to people. Can't do that. Can't gloss yourself. Don't. Can't do that. Okay? And you cannot 100 your own take. I mean, you're pushing corporal offenses according to the Duke Code. So you cannot. So consider this a warning, and it's really for David's own good, frankly. Okay. You cannot 100 yourself. You can't drop a take and then give yourself a 100. You can't. Don't. That's a. No. Don't do that, David. Don't do that. And then there is. Unless it's to be mocking. If you're mocking and ridiculing that which is dumb, you can all cap your entire take, right? Because you're mocking and ridiculing that which is dumb, and that is in accordance to the dude code. So
you're engaging in some level of satire.
Correct. So if you're doing it for that reason, the whole thing can be all caps if you want. But if you are delivering a serious take, it can't be like more than like three words in concurrence, right? It just, there's got to be some limit there. And I mean, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then just a sentence later, he throws in 3 more. I mean, that's 12 in 2 lines. That's an egregious violation, Todd.
Did he dot his I's with little hearts or anything as well?
No, but he did give himself a 100, which you can't do. Try that with, well, assuming you have one, try that with your wife. Your next argument. Give her your best comeback and then give yourself a 100 after you do that. If you've ever thought, what's celibacy like after 35? You'll learn, and it'll be great. Okay? So do that. Yeah, argue with your wife, give her your best snappy comeback, and then go, 100, I'm out.
100 points for Gryffindor.
Oh, hope you got a nice couch. All right. So have we satisfied the dude code that we can get to the rest of this take?
Good enough.
Is it good enough? Okay. So just to recap, you cannot 100 yourself. You can't. Don't ever do that. All right? Don't. In any form. Unless you're being self-deprecating. And it's obvious. It's obvious. Okay? But unironically, you cannot 100 your own take. Don't ever do that. That's a dude code lashing. Number two, there is some form of a cap of how many all cap words you can use concurrently without it being satirical. Just to summarize. All right. Now to the rest of this take. When Joe Biden, I think this is buried here, Todd. I think is actually a really good question.
Well, you know what I think about this.
I think if he would have said, help me, hey, Steve, I'm trying to understand why Joe Biden crossing himself when talking about abortion is sacrilegious, but Trump selling Bibles is not. We would have tackled your question if you just would have sent it in like that, because it's a really good one. All right. So let's tackle this, that question from my perspective, and then we'll let Todd have his. When Joe Biden is crossing himself in celebration of child sacrifice, that is a clear and not even debatable act of sacrilege. It's not like subjective. He is attributing something holy to that which is unholy. There are seven things the Lord hates, six that are detestable to him, and I think the very first one listed is hands that shed innocent blood, or it's one of the first ones listed, mm-hmm. right? Okay. I've told you guys many times what led to the final diaspora of the Jewish people when they went down to the Valley of Ben-Hinnom and they threw their babies into the fire to Molech the demon. All right, this is an absolute red line in God's economy. Is the sacrifice of children. Okay? So there nothing righteous comes of this act. Nothing does. The act in and of itself is to promote that which is unrighteous, unholy. Okay? When we're talking about Trump pimping Bibles, now, somehow, and I don't know why, I got sent one of these. I don't think I told the audience this yet. I told you about it, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think I told the audience about this yet. I got sent one of these. Maybe they got to sheet number 363 of the conservative influencer, contact list to send one of these to, and they just stopped editing names at that point because they were bored. And so I made it past the cut, and I got one. All right. So I had a chance to look through it. It is just the King James Bible, the original King James Bible. He signs it, and there's a dedication from Lee Greenwood, who, by the way, they still played "I'm Proud to Be an American" at the NFL draft last night. What does it say that I was actually surprised to hear that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it kind of shows you how far we've fallen. All right. There's a back page dedication from Lee Greenwood about, you know, his personal thoughts on how influential the Bible was on the founding of America, and we need to bring the Bible back to save America. I don't know that any of us would disagree with anything Lee Greenwood wrote. Okay. Now, is it tacky? Is it cringy? I've done events where people have asked me to sign their Bibles before, and I'm like, you know, I didn't write this one right. You know, I mean, I don't think it's my place. But then it also, they meant it earnestly. And then I could see that they were kind of offended. You know, they were just collecting names of people that have influenced their faith positively. So I've agreed to do it at times. Okay. Is it tacky? Is it cringy? If I were advising Donald Trump, would I say, hey, you know, autograph Bibles and sell them? No. Okay. But it is still a promotion of the Bible. In its unedited form. Are there people that are going to read the Bible because they got one from Donald Trump who may previously not? I would argue the answer is yes. Now, if your argument is that we don't know this is true, we suspect it is part of a fundraising effort to pay legal bills and campaign bills. We don't know that's true, though. We can't say that definitively, right?
All right.
But we could give an educated guess that's probably something along those lines. Okay. All right. So therefore, are we in a gray area here? Yeah. Which is why when you and Aaron mocked and laughed at it and derided it, I didn't push back or argue against it one bit, did I?
Right.
Right. because we are clearly in a gray area. It's not, it's clearly something I would not advocate doing. But on the other hand, what I, if we're going to have Trump go QVC, would I rather have him hawking Bibles to people that otherwise wouldn't read them than much of the other stuff that he throws out there? Hems of his garment. Like he did sell that earlier this year, guys. Hems of his garment, okay? Literally, pieces of his suit when he showed up for one of his arrangements, he was selling them. There's nothing righteous there. That's just pure idolatry. At least here, the word of God is going to be, one person might open it who otherwise would not have, all right? Now, if your sliding scale of cringe to idolatry is exceeded here, as it is for you and Aaron,
yes.
I cannot argue with you, okay? But at least this is in some form of a gray area, meaning that a righteous thing is still being promoted. There is nothing that you could even argue is remotely righteous about Joe Biden attaching holiness to one of the most unholy things that God detests in his economy. That's how I would answer your question, which, aside from your dude code violations, is a very good question. Todd, your thoughts?
No, I think you've covered it.
But you're on the other side of the. You think the cringe to idolatry ratio is actually in the red. That's why you're a no on the.
Yes, but
Trump
I would have never come close to all caps or not writing this. This is Trump is just endlessly frustrating for, you know, how close he is and could be. And just himself. This is, it's not that other people could read this Bible. Awesome. How about you, Donald? That's what's frustrating.
Well,
you're the guy who's peddling this.
Thou art the man. Have you thought about opening it up?
You open it up.
Yeah.
And proceed accordingly.
Yeah. And well, so, there's that too. You actually made David's argument for him better than he did. But yeah, that would have actually been the place to start with what you said there just a second ago. Yeah. All right, I think we can get to this one pretty quickly. What would you do if you found out your child's Catholic college is allowing biological males and females to room together on campus? When we questioned it, the administration acted like we were the bigots. Signed, heartbroken parent. What do you think?
Okay, this isn't even a transgender thing. This is just men and women.
I think the notion of biological is because it is a transgendered.
Okay,
thing.
Yeah. I don't. Okay, yeah. Well, that's enough. That's
otherwise,
layer.
I would guess she would have said letting people shack up at a Catholic school. Okay,
well,
yeah, I think the biological means, hey, I think I'm a woman, so let me live with the women. Okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, I know what I would do, and honestly, this is one of the reasons. People...
Is it an FCC violation for you to say so?
Oh. It could be. But
can we speak
funny.
In code? People, blink three times out there if you know what Todd is talking about.
People ask me, why am I at Des Moines Christian School and not at Dahlin Catholic School? Mm-hmm. We have two Christian schools mm-hmm. in town. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple reasons for that. One of them is wearing the Save Girl Sports thing. The girls that showed up that did not know my daughters, but they showed up to be part of the fight. They were all from Des Moines Christian. Nobody showed up from Des Moines Catholic. But also, based on my research with Steve, and I'm very well aware, like none of this nonsense goes on there, but it does go on at Dahlin Catholic, which is a bigger school. There's more students there. I covered it as a reporter.
Oh, there was a walkout once. They tried to fire an openly homosexual teacher. The students walked out in his defense.
I did not, after coming what I was just running away from, I know how I'm not going to just like, I got to keep my powder dry for a while. I would, you know, I would be in burn it all down mode there too. And I would be at the college. And you're more free to do it at a Catholic institution because we're supposed to agree on those rules. Hmm. So yeah, I'd be making people very, very uncomfortable. And you should too.
So we're back to, I like my way of doing things
there
better than your
is.
Way of not
you
doing
are.
Anything.
That's
right?
It.
Yeah. All right. Hour two is next. And we're back here with Hour 2 here on Blaze TV Radio and Podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin, our intern Victoria on her last day. And all of you, And you guys can let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com. That's D-E-A-C-E. Like us on Facebook, MeWe and Gab. You can follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter. Get our Instagram and TikTok if you listen to the podcast. Thank you. Please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show, of course. And if you also wouldn't mind, hit subscribe, or if you're tuning in on iTunes, follow. And that makes sure that every time we do a new episode, it will show up in your feed every single time. And this part of the show brought to you by our friends at Relief Factor. Remember when you could go and do all the normal things and be active and weren't struggling every day with aches and pains and stiffness and soreness? Those were the days. What if they could come back? Now, we're not guaranteeing you anything, but there's pretty good odds we have found your solution, and it's called Relief Factor. What is it? It's a supplement created by physicians who can prescribe drugs for pain relief. And yeah, the drugs can release or relieve the pain, but they just mask it. And sometimes they have side effects. They don't go after the inflammation that's actually causing your pain in the first place. They wanted to come up with something that did, and that something is Relief Factor. It's a drug-free supplement that targets the inflammation that's likely the source of your chronic pain. Over the years, over 1 million people have tried the 3-week quick start with Relief Factor, and they have seen such great results in 3 weeks or less, they've stuck around long term. Why not see if you're one of that 70% that applies to? It's just $20 to find out. What do you got to lose for $20? 70% odds we have found your solution for just $20 when you go to relieffactor.com. Again, head over there now, relieffactor.com. All right, Todd, let's continue on a Feedback Friday.
Okay.
All right, let's go here next. I wanted to send you guys something that maybe could be a topic of conversation on the show. Long story short, my job situation recently changed because I was let go on a ridiculous technicality, only to find out a few weeks later that the sales division that I was working for in the Raleigh-Durham era was being annexed. I guess it was cheaper to let me go on a technicality than it was to give me any type of severance, but I digress. Being in that space, I gravitated toward getting another job with a competitor, at least for now, because I know that space. I now have a second round of interviews to work for Google Fiber as a sales rep. On the surface, I have no problem selling internet because it's needed. Good internet is useful. How you use it is up to you and between you and the Lord. But in getting to my second round interview with the company, they sent me some emails going over their healthcare package. It is very robust and probably the best you can get with any private company. They also have what they call their LGBTQ coverage. The question I have is this: where is the moral line for this? Can I work for this type of company that offers this kind of coverage as a follower of Christ? Even being prior military, insurance like TRICARE would cover things like same-sex or domestic partnerships, which I obviously disagree with. Is there a way to balance this line? This is the first and only time I saw insurance specifically state that they cover gender mutilation surgeries. This is the moral conundrum that I'm in. Being that I lost my job and I need to find another one quickly, the initial temptation is great to work for a company that can pay you well and give you the best insurance money can buy. But to quote our mutual friend, Steve Noble, who... shout out to Steve. Am I throwing my shoulder to the same plow by bringing value to an organization that is helping to push a godless agenda? And this is from Jeff Graver in Raleigh, North Carolina. So, Jeff, when we look at culture, and we haven't done this on the show in several years, but I think this is a good moment to reset it. When we look at what it means to be in the world and not of it, I think you break culture down into three criteria. What we have to reject, meaning it is very clear from God's word and what Christians of all in every arm of orthodoxy have agreed upon for 2,000 years that this is orthodoxy, okay? It is very clear from those things that this is a no. It's a verboten. It's a red line. I cannot do it. All right. Like, did you see? And I don't know if he's trolling us or not, but Kanye West, two or three years after, you know, producing a gospel album, is now saying that he's going to start producing ye porn. Have you seen this?
He has
said this. That part's true. Whether it's some kind of troll or not, you know what I mean? I don't know. Okay. But he has said that he's going to produce that. Now, that's a red line, right? That's a very clear red line.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So there's what we must reject. Okay. Then there is what we can receive. All right. Meaning that this is kind of a neutral space. And as long as I don't turn it into idolatry, even if everyone else around me is, that's a them problem, right? And and when I've talked about this in past years, I've used the example of I moved to a part of the country where high school football is supreme, okay? The whole town's about it. It's the identity of the town. It's the identity of the community. And so should I immerse myself in that subculture in order to, you know, become, to have connectivity with my community? I would argue, yeah. Now, if the star player slaps his girlfriend around and they decide they don't want to do anything about it because it would cost him next week's game when they want him to play, that we don't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but until they take it, even if it is over the top levels of devotion, and you're like, I mean, listen, I love football and all, guys, but come on, there's like, we play like, you know, we only play these games 3 months out of the year, one night a week. There's other things going on. Even if that's true, as long as you are not pushed to violate that which God says you can't do, that's your line, right? And you see Daniel practice this, for example. He honors the dietary restrictions. He serves the king, okay? But when the time comes that he's asked to do things, so the dietary restrictions are now you have to eat the things that your Lord says, your God says you can't, or you have to pray to the king as if he is God when your God says you can't, he risks fiery furnaces and lion's dens. He draws lions. But it requires getting to that point before he draws a line, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's what we must reject, what we can receive, and then what we should redeem. That there should be, yeah, these are areas where we want to reclaim them for Christ, right? Like my company putting up, you know, $3 million to, well, and then you throw in the marketing budget, so about $7 million to make a movie without any guarantee it would be financially successful at all. In fact, we finally officially got into the black about 30 days ago, you know? So why did we do that? Because this is a powerful platform, cinema, storytelling is, and we wanted to redeem it. And we thought we had a story that was good enough and the execution of it was good enough to play even some small role in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what we must reject, what we can receive, what we should try to redeem, all right? So I think what you're really asking us here is if working for a company that offers this kind of coverage, is it in the realm of what we must reject? Or it is in the realm of what we can receive, meaning I can take part in it, provided it doesn't require me to deny my Lord by in the ways they are demanding that I do so. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So first question I would ask: is there another company in your area, maybe not pay you as well as this one, maybe not offer you as great of insurance as this one, but certainly a living that you can pay your bills and not be worse than an infidel by providing for your family, right? So is there another option to do that? I'm guessing in the Raleigh-Durham area, known as the Research Triangle, the answer to that question is probably yes. There's probably other people in a similar space that could also do that. Is it standard operating practice down though in that area to offer these kinds of coverages and stuff for people? See, that might be the case too, right?
Right.
But I would at least want to know, you know, is that the case? Are there other options where I don't even have to entertain this calculus at all? And if it means I might have to take a little bit less money, you know, that's where I'm just going to trust the Lord to reward faithfulness and take that choice. Fair? Am I you mm-hmm. with me so far?
Yeah.
If there is not, then we entertain this. If there's not, because if there is, then you don't have to entertain it. If there's not, then we do. And I think these kinds of dilemmas, whether you can work for a company as big as Google or you work for the neighborhood pharmacy, man, and they told you not to fill the ivermectin prescriptions 2 years ago. I mean, if you're a believer, it's going to be really hard to not have these sorts of conflicts in a post-Christian country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I would say in this case, as long as you are not being asked to actively affirm this, I'd have much more problems with you signing a document saying I will undergo DEI or ESG training to make sure I treat the people who carry these sinful maladies around with the utmost respect. I'd be much more concerned about receiving that level of indoctrination, because I think that is that should be rejected. That should be. In this case, if you're not being asked to, if you've sought, let me say that again, if you have sought other options that don't require this dilemma, and they're not available, then in that case, if you're not being asked to affirm something or to endure something in order to qualify and then affirm it, then I don't see the problem with it at that point. I think you get into, I think you're in Daniel territory. Daniel served a pagan king who was a wicked man, unregenerate, many wives, many concubines, many, many kids from many, many different baby mamas. And he was a very capable administrator to him, was he not?
Right.
He was. But when those kings said, hey, but we need you to do the things now that honor our customs and not yours, that's where he drew the line. And I would say making you go to woke training to be indoctrinated is honoring their customs and not ours. That's where the line is drawn.
Yeah. Based on the way you're applying your standard right now, I think you're not going far enough. I think you need to renounce your citizenship in America and move to Antarctica. I mean, God, there's no... Look at this country right now. You're on the hook for everything you're talking about just by being an American, by the way you're applying your standard. And Steve bringing up Daniel there at the end is really bringing everything home. Even if this nation were far better off and the country we wanted to live in and raise our kids in, you know who we'd still be surrounded by? Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
You're applying this somehow thinking you can have your perfect private Idaho. You're going to be surrounded by sinners. You're meant to influence sinners. You're not this being a Christian is not an escape clause. It's not a PG faith. Like I've said before, it's a rated R faith. And it's supposed to stink and it's supposed to smell. That doesn't mean, you're working for a cable company or fiber optics or whatever you said. You're not working for Planned Parenthood.
Right.
The dumb in healthcare policy, find me the businesses that don't have dumb and ridiculous and borderline immoral, if not immoral, healthcare policies.
But I do think it's good to be asking these kinds of questions.
Because we're all going to
be facing these dilemmas moving forward.
I agree, but there seems to be a sensibility. I don't even think this is unique or a one-off in a faith application. There's no way to not be in the mud on some level. You're not called to live on a commune. Go be the light. I don't think we're doing any help to how we solve these problems. You're not going to work for Planned Parenthood. None of us here think you're going to work for Planned Parenthood. I hope you don't think you're like this far away for working for Planned Parenthood because you work for the cable company that has a stupid healthcare policy. We're all aligned with that. On some level. I mean, my God, Steve, did you do a total deep dive on where all the raw materials were sourced for this table and that wall? I mean, this is endless.
You're right. We could take it to endless degrees.
How about we take our faith and the light we shine to it endless degree and not worry like this?
If they come to him and say, though, will you consent to having a portion, like, you know, let's say Planned Parenthood, since you invoked Planned Parenthood,
yes, and
let's make Planned Parenthood now United Way. They used to say, are companies aligned with the United Way? Would you consent to a portion of, your healthcare dollars or something or other to United Way? If they ask you the same thing about Planned Parenthood, and then someone unofficially kind of says to you, they kind of frown on you if you don't say yes to that you say no to.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Well, anything you could...
Yeah.
You can act.
But Todd is correct. Don't drive yourself crazy with this either.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? I would rather get this kind of note from someone who's risking driving themselves crazy, because let's face it, many believers aren't risking anything by even considering these questions at all these days.
Of course. I agree. Just if you are offered opportunities to apply your faith, and you are often, check these boxes, sign up for the, you know, there it is. There's the opportunity. You have your... Whatever you do, marketing, there's nothing you can do about the healthcare policy that this business is choosing.
I mean, we didn't have, even with our skeleton crew, not everybody that worked on Nefarious was a believer by a long shot. Now, what we did do, though, and you give, you know, give our production team, Chris, Carrie, and Chuck, the credit for this, the environment on our set... You know, you see some of these clips of what the crew at The Chosen, you know, with the rainbow flags.
Yeah, yeah.
The environment on their set never even, the idea that you would walk in and display one of those on our set is a little, is akin to, I'm going to walk in to Nan Pop's house with my tongue in my girlfriend's mouth. Mm-hmm. No, you ain't. That ain't happening here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, the environment that that was fostered on the set by our directors, the idea that the pagans that worked for us would have thought, well, I'm just kind of free to let the freak flag fly here. No, you're not. We're paying you on our time.
Yeah.
So that's not you don't have to convert, but don't come in here trying to convert us. That poop's not happening here. You know, and that's where this thing usually only goes, though, one way. See, where you are forced to determine what are my rules of engagement, we never force this on them. And that's why you see all the viral photos of the crew on The Chosen. And it's probably some fourth unit, seventh assistant cameraman with their rainbow flag, okay, on such a massive production. But again, what is it about why would they feel like they would be comfortable doing that, understanding the production that they are working for? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is where it's okay for us to put the same kinds of pressures on to work to bear the other way. No, we're not going to conform for you. I mean, if you're good at your job, we'll pay you. But don't come in here thinking you're going to dictate terms and impose your views on us while you're here. This is just a transaction. We're paying you for the gifts the God that you have rebelled against and hate gave you. And we want to use them to their fullest potential. And the worker, our God says the worker's worth is higher. So we'll pay you for them. But don't think that this is now your platform to evangelize us. The answer is not no. It's hell no. Not happening.
As it should be. You also did not enforce some sort of... You know, purity tests, or ask for them to recite their shibboleth. You know, that did not happen. The same here. Listen, the old pitcher, I can't remember the actor's name in Major League, summed this up. You know, said, there's one thing for you to strip down buck naked and bark in the moon. And then it's another thing if you do the same thing in my bedroom.
Right.
This is what we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, they're barking out the moon buck naked over there. Look every direction in a 360 degrees. It's there. It's there. It's there. It's there.
Yeah.
You working at the fiber optic company or whatever is not suddenly becoming a pagan. If they come and ask you, hey,
become a pagan.
Would you like to be a pagan? Then you flip them off.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Maybe we should have just gotten to that bottom line first and save the audience 10 minutes. you know, one of the reasons we have this dilemma is we don't have much of a parallel economy these days. We don't have much of that. And thankfully, there is one place where we do, and it's in the mobile phone industry with our friends over at Patriot Mobile, where you don't have to directly give money to people who hate you anymore, and you get an outstanding product with an outstanding customer service team anytime you need something. You need to upgrade your phone, switch your phone, change your number, keep your number if you're making the switch. You want to switch networks within their hub because you've moved somewhere, and another network would be better for what your reception needs are. They will help you with all that kind of stuff, and they make it as seamless as absolutely possible. If you're a veteran or first responder, if you want to make the switch to Patriot Mobile, let them know they've got extra ways to say thank you for your service for the rest of us and for all of us. With my name, Steve, you'll get a free activation as your promo code at patriotmobile.com/Steve. That's patriotmobile.com/Steve. Use the promo code Steve at patriotmobile.com/Steve. Micah says, I was recently recommended to take a new position at work. The job was a $4 increase over my current minimum wage and included full-time hours with regular raises every 6 months. I turned it down as the job would be in the pharmacy, and I realized after my initial excitement that I would be required to discuss and recommend all the services that the company provided, including both the pill and the vaccine. As a Christian, I cannot be a middleman for murder on demand. Furthermore, I spoke with the human resource manager and pharmacist and let them know I couldn't take the job and cited that it wasn't the best place for me, which is true. My question is this. Should I have been more assertive with the reasoning behind my decision not to take the job, meaning like told them, hey, I think this is immoral. That's why I'm not going to do it. When I was talking to them, both were understanding but didn't ask for further details, even though I was prepared to give them. Thank you for what you and your team do. So, my answer here may surprise you. Maybe not. But I would say, nope, you are not required to tell them why. Now, if you felt in the spirit like you are placed in that position to let them know what's up, then you should answer that conviction. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you are, after the event, ruminating on it to the point of emailing us about it does make me wonder if maybe that was a moment that you were called to lay down some ordinance and you're concerned that you missed it. I don't know. But barring that, you know, there are moments in the Gospels where Jesus performs miracles and says, now, go, you know, and do the sacrifices that Moses said, keep the law, but for now, just keep this between us. There's a time and a season. I mean, Jesus doesn't show up day one in Galilee with a Messiah shirt, you know, with sequins, you know. I mean, we're here, you know. I mean, for everything, there's a time and a season. And in your case, unless you think, and I'm guessing you think you may have been, but unless you think you were specifically in that moment called to out yourself because they needed to be convicted, then you don't always have to be in a hurry to out yourself, because in this case, that'll get around and they will blacklist you comprehensively. You know, you'll be an example. I go back to my first program director, the great award-winning Van Harden, when I first started in this business. And a piece of advice he gave me after my first few weeks on the air, when I had switched over from sports to news, he said, Steve, as Christians, we are called to be willing to die for our cause. But we are not called to go seek out the centurion and ask him, do you mind if I impale myself on your sword? Right? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the distinction there. If you're being called in that moment, then there are no other calculations. Don't do any other math and answer the call. Because the Lord of math has made the call. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So don't do any moral math. Don't do any moral calculuses or calculi. I'm not sure which it is. I went to public school. But at that moment, okay, do what your creator told you to do. And the fallout and everything is not your responsibility. That's not your math to do. Honor the Lord of math and do it. However, unless that level of conviction is there, there's no reason for you to go ahead and just, you know, hey, I'm here to be blacklisted in my whole industry. You don't have to do that either. You know, that's not necessarily a requirement. Your thoughts?
Well, this is the perfect companion piece.
Which is why I put them back to back.
And this is obviously amen for you taking this stand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the most general sense, I agree with Steve. You're under no moral obligation to confront them. But here, in my mind, there are the two scales. These are the scales. And then one is what, if I say this, are there actually bridges that I'm unnecessarily burning that will not allow me in the future to be efficacious in any number of ways of life, as a provider, a husband, a give witness down the road, all those things. But on the other end, and let's face it, it's as likely as anything else in this scenario Was it just the desire to be comfortable? Like, ugh.
Yeah. Did you not answer the call?
Were there really not any consequences to saying thing one way or the other? And you just, the only consequence would be like, I've done the right thing. I'm not doing this. That's immoral. But I just decided it's not worth the fight. It may have not been worth the fight specifically right then and there. But here's what we need to do in this culture, obviously. We need, this is a workout. We need to develop that muscle of getting uncomfortable as many times as possible. Mm-hmm. And if the only consequence was getting uncomfortable with no other consequence, like Steve said, I don't know that. That's my advice. I think we just need to practice it. We need to, on the soccer sidelines, when some Karen mom says something out loud and then, if there's an opportunity, you know what? I think I'm going to say something. Doesn't have to be yelling and screaming, but I guarantee you're going to make that person uncomfortable and probably some people on the sidelines. Do you care?
Here is, I think, the overall bottom line of the conversation we had about both of these last two notes back to back. It is incredibly necessary that if you call yourself a believer, you are having these internal dialogues now. That you are going to be tested. The spirit of the age wants to test you. And is very confident that if they push on you just a little bit, you'll take it from there.
Very confident.
Yes.
Very.
I'm not exactly sure what evidence they have for that confidence other than all the evidence we've given them. All right. But
all in.
But here's the thing, it's a little bit like losing weight. You can't, none of us can do anything about what we didn't do yesterday. We can't do anything about the lack of courage we showed yesterday. I can't do anything about how terrible I ate yesterday, that I didn't work out yesterday. I can do something about it today, right?
Yeah.
I can eat better today. I can go to the gym today. I can exercise today. And then I'll worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's another day, Scarlett, right? Okay. I can do that today. And if I just have that everyday perspective, sooner or later, before you know it, you're stacking days. And now you've established a new form of discipline in your life. Okay. It's a lifestyle now that your body and you emotionally are now, you're used to. What's the name of the organization we've had on the show a couple of times? It's called Courage is a Habit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what it's called, right?
Alvin Louie.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about here. Just, I can start stacking days. I can't do anything about the fact I punted yesterday. You can just beat yourself up over that, incessantly if you want, and you'll be of no use to anybody today if you do. Okay. What I can do is not miss the opportunities to stand up for what I believe in when they arrive today. I can do that today. And then the next day, have the same perspective. Today, I can do it today. When I first had to lose the first 100 pounds 10, 15 years ago, the idea of going to the gym 3-4 days a week for an indefinite period of time was just beyond daunting. I just had to learn I can do it today. I don't even want to think about, I can't do 3 weeks in one day, can I? And thinking about it is what overwhelms you, because you're like, I can't do that. And then you quit. All right. Today, I can do it today. And I think we're all going to need to understand that the entire culture now is a pressure point. And the enemy is the one applying the pressure nowadays. And he's anxious to see what the soft spot is. So be ready. Be ready. And these are the kinds of conversations where iron sharpens iron, and people, we hold each other accountable, give each other encouragement to prepare ourselves for the fact we're in a post-Christian society, and therefore we're the ones that will be getting the testing now, not giving out the tests. Okay, Clean Pure is back on the show with their famous Thunderstorm Air Purifier, their top-selling air purifier that quickly works to destroy the components that are causing that bad air in your home or your office or your garage, whether it's mildew, mold, bacteria, even some viruses. It's not a freshener. It's a purifier. Even cigarette smoke, dirty diapers, no match for the Eden Pure. And you'll never have to replace any filters, either out of pocket or out of time, ever. And now you can save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-pack for whole home protection. That's right, 3 units now are under $200 with that savings. You can put one in your basement, bedroom, family room, kitchen, anywhere you need clean, fresh air. When you go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the discount code STEVE3 for those savings, that's EdenPureDeals.com. Save the $200 at EdenPureDeals.com with the code STEVE3 at EdenPureDeals.com. We're back to some more Feedback Friday. If there's anything that's been stuck in my head from watching your show the last few months, I think about becoming more uncomfortable. Todd now swoons. It reaches onto many facets of my daily life. I'm working out. CrossFit is hard, but that discomfort has strengthened me and made me better at the sport I'm the most passionate about. Rehabbing from hip surgery has been full of pain, setbacks, and success. Trusting the process and staying uncomfortable has fueled my successful recovery. As a financial advisor, I teach clients patience and to embrace short-term discomfort as it sows the seeds for the best growth. In January, the Board of Elders at my Lutheran church reached out to me and asked me to consider becoming an elder. The uncomfortableness of this trumps all the others above combined. I've always considered myself part of the flock and never educated enough in the Bible to disciple others. But when I got asked, I thought about your show. God calls on many when they're not ready, but if you show faith in your Creator, He will give you the strength and spirit to do His work. Don't be afraid to answer the call. Show faith in the one doing the calling. I just served communion for the first time to my congregation. I led our service in our corporate prayers. What a humbling experience that I'm grateful God asked me to be His hands and mouth this day. Long term, we are trying to restart our men's ministry as I feel like our middle-aged guys are being left behind. It was time for me to stop complaining about it and to do something. In particular, thank you to Todd for this constant reminder to challenge myself in my own life and the community around me. Lately, it sounds like some listeners have been turned off by this challenge, but I pray if they turn away, it's not forever, as this is their own opportunity to be refined and further purified, and I would say also to find joy in finding a purpose. I'll add that to your note as well. That's from Ed Wildermuth in Indianapolis.
Go ahead. Yeah, you're welcome, and you're right that you've noticed it. It's bugging some people lately, but every time they say it out loud that it's bugging them, they don't seem to realize that it's confirming the point. You know, this is the whole ball game. Will you humble yourself to a calling far greater than you can possibly ever wrap your brain around or understand? Yours is but to be faithful.
Amen. Jim Woody in North Carolina says, you have spoken many times pertaining to what a church men's ministry should not be. In your opinion, what would a successful church men's ministry look like, and what should the objectives be? My church has attempted to start a men's ministry by having a men's breakfast on the first Saturday of the month. We have a speaker, we break bread, we have breakout prayer time. We've had as many as 40 men attend, but it seems that we've lost steam. Any suggestions would be appreciated. Here's why you lost steam. Men are result-driven creatures. So, the first few times you guys had a breakfast, men came. They got together with other men. They got real about what's going on in their lives. They sought out prayer and accountability. They basically emptied out that baggage. Okay? What are they going to do next? I already emptied out that baggage. I already dealt with that. I've already got an accountability buddy that I'm talking to and is helping me make sure I don't go back to blank, 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 whatever the it that was. All right. What's the ongoing mission? What is the mission? What's the commission? Right? I mean, Jesus gave his apostles, all men, a mission. And then he told them to go. Go fulfill this mission. Men need a mission. And the vision of your men's ministry needs to state what that mission is. The amount of guys who, with all the other temptations they have, with time and obligations, who are going to be able to just consistently just get together all the time to do nothing but pray and confess, and those are vitally important things. But to what end? You have to give men a mission. They need an objective. What is the mission? When we train soldiers, we put them through boot camp, right?
Yeah.
We train them for with a weapon. We train them, if they're special forces, they get a special kind of training. Is it that training is important when it comes to their physical fitness, their mental alertness, right? Mm-hmm. It's vitally important to those things, okay? But is it ultimately for those things?
No,
it is for the what? The mission. What's the mission? What's the mission? And a men's ministry needs a vision for what that mission is, so that there is a call to action. It doesn't feel like we're just talking, but we're going somewhere. We're doing something. We're making progress. We're not just going over the same ground over and over again. Let me give you an example. Let's say I struggle with lust. All right? And I'll just do something personal in my own life. Okay? Let's say I struggle with lust. Am I more likely to struggle with lust if I live in an insulated life all week long and it's just about my 9-to-5 job, my family obligations, and then I've got free time? That's me time. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people are like on a mission trip in Africa? And then like in the middle of like, you know, building wells for people, you're like, hold on, man, I gotta jump on Pornhub here on my phone. You're not even thinking about it at that moment, are you?
Right.
You know why? Do you know why that is? You're on mission. That's why. You're on mission. There's a greater priority. No one is like, you know, on a mission trip to Haiti and you're like, I could really use a chicken some yoga pants right now. No one does that. You're on mission. You're on mission. What's the mission? We want the men to do what? And it's got to be something other than just be good husbands and fathers. You're gathering these men together uniquely. Not everybody even there is a husband and father. So you're gathering these men together uniquely. There's a fellowship there, right?
Yeah.
So then what would bind them together to continue on with each other? A mission. That's what would do it. What's the mission? And then missions can get fulfilled, and then we move on to the next mission, right?
Yes.
So here's a mission. We are going to seek to block, infiltrate, end any vestige of drag queen story time hour in our community. That's our mission. We're going to do that. And we get together, figure out like that the church, the guys that got together, was it Utah? We had that note last year. They got together and bought up all the tickets so the kids couldn't come. Stuff like that, okay? What is the mission? What's the mission? You have to give men a mission. And then that a mission may end. Then you will give them another mission. And some guys at that point may be like, I'm in a season in my life. I don't have time for another mission right now. And so other guys will take their place. And then we got to go back and forth. That's okay. You know, just like regular soldiers have tours of duty and then go home for a while and maybe then reenlist or join the National Guard. You see what I'm saying? I mean, same thing. Okay. But the reason why it's tapered off, Jim, there's not a mission. We're not women. I know you know that, but we're not like them. We won't find a continuous reward in just the gathering in and of itself, in just the relating in and of itself, in just the sharing and talking in and of itself. That will last until you feel as if you've gotten some breakthrough in your life of what it is that you're struggling with, right? In other words, that mission's completed. Okay. And so if we're just going to keep doing, well, I already did that mission. I'm good, man. I feel good. My kid wants to go look for a car. My wife wants to go shop for a house. I got a lawn. You see what I'm saying? I got a mission. I got to move on. What's the mission? What do we want them to do? And that's what will bind them together. The mission. Nobody wants to keep going through boot camp over and over again. Nobody wants to keep going through training over and over again. Kind of like on a football team, by the end of the season, by the end of the training camp, they always say they're anxious to go and play a game so they can hit somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the mission. What's the mission? Anything you want to add to that really quick?
Oh, by the way, just like people ultimately reject boot camp over and over again, they're going to reject the mission too. But at least they're rejecting solid food, and then that's on them. Mm-hmm. Don't give them an excuse to just reject something that, quite frankly, at the end of the day, most people are by default going to reject. Make it the gospel, in all its parts, and you know, by their fruit you will know them. Give them the quest, and then if they reject that, that's entirely on Jim. But you have to offer it to them.
Yep. Have people leave because they're not up to the task, not because they feel as if it's just a waste of my time or complacent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That now what you're doing is you're raising a bar. You're raising a standard. That's a meritocracy. Hey man, I'm not up to this. So I quit on my own. Cool. But don't have it be because we didn't offer them the chance to be more than they currently are. Yeah. Folks, the attack on excellence, speaking of meritocracies, the attack on excellence in America is systemic. For example, the American Medical Association just announced that healthcare is imbued with white supremacism. You can't make this stuff up. Now, of course, they're going to have, you people are going to be the ones going to see the doctors that get and the surgeons that get in on the lower standards. They're not going to make themselves go with the surgeon with the shaky hand who couldn't operate successfully on the cadaver. They're going to have him operate on you. Okay. But these are the things we need to be made aware of so we can push back. And we know what the mission is. And one great source for this kind of information, and where we got this story, in fact, was from our friends at Hillsdale College, their magazine in Primus. You can subscribe with absolutely no cost or obligation. Get some of the finest and most thought-provoking writers on the right, like Christopher Rufo and others. All right, it gives you smart constitutional commentary from people like Chris Rufo, Victor Davis Hanson, Heather McDonald, Hillsdale's own president, Larry Arn, and many more. If you don't already get it, get a free subscription now at daceforhillsdale.com. daceforhillsdale.com is where you want to go. Again, that's daceforhillsdale.com. I'm looking for what I want to close with. Let's do this. I'm a Blaze subscriber. I listen to your show daily. I appreciate what you guys do. One of the issues in the 2020 election that seems to have been swept under the rug rather quickly was how a feeble and frail white man could receive 81 million votes, being much more popular than Obama, in the middle of a pandemic. The reasons given were a large number of mail-in ballots, a very unlikable opponent in Trump, and other nonsense that didn't hold much water, in my view. I agree. One wouldn't be safe to assume, I believe, that the same feeble and frail white man who has now angered Muslims, Jews, and working-class voters can in no way, form, or fashion get anywhere close to 81 million votes and have that spun as legitimate again. I know. Democrats don't care how things are perceived. However, I do believe with RFK Jr. as a candidate, it would potentially cause more scrutiny from the more moderate left-wing media should he get anywhere close to that number. That's your first mistake. Everything you've said up to this point is correct, but that's your first mistake. If everything I'm stated as at a minimum is mostly accurate, that would seem to leave the Democrats with quite the quandary on how many votes to stuff the ballot boxes to both secure a win, but also make it look legitimate. Do you see this as an issue for Democrats based on what you currently see with voter apathy towards both candidates? How many more or less votes would you anticipate Biden and Trump to receive in the 2024 election? That is from Derek Rooker. So I think you've adequately, Derek, described the environment. But I want to go back to what I said, where I said, I think this was your mistake, brother. What's the more moderate left-wing media? Who is that? Do you know who that is? I'm asking. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
I mean, I assume you mean like a Glenn Greenwald who is buddies with Tucker Carlson and Naomi Wolf, who's buddies with a Steve Bannon. They are primarily talking to us now. Like the amount of people in their native habitats who are still reading Glenn Greenwald and Naomi Wolf is minimal. Just like if RFK Jr. is on television, it's usually on which network?
Fox.
Fox. Yeah. Yeah. They're talking to our ecosystem, not theirs. So you're looking for some objective measure that would organically hold them accountable for replaying 2020. It doesn't exist. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That this is, I thought there was one left, the voters. And that's why I thought there was not just going to be a red wave, but today was a good day for a red wedding. That's what I thought. That's what I thought we were going to see.
Not even because it was principled, just because it was like a natural guttural reaction to.
And now the voters cannot even be counted on to hold people accountable now. That's why the 2022 election wrecked me. I'm wrecked here. I'm a broken man. I'm Richard Gere, an officer and a gentleman. I got nowhere else to go. All right. It's raining. It's pouring. I'm soaking wet outside the window. All right. I'm at the end of myself. Okay. No, there is no organic means by which they are held accountable to anything. Not.
And Louis Gossett Jr. isn't even here anymore.
That's right.
You. God rest his soul.
Indeed. He got to hit the eject before he got to see them steal another election. Indeed. Victoria, thank you.
Thank you, Victoria.
And thanks to all of you. We'll see you Monday, Romans 8:28.